versus Washington State Department of Employment Security.
May it please the court. I'm Ann Paxton. I'm here to represent Ms. Ayun Ali. I'd like to reserve a minute at the end for rebuttal. I'm here to ask that the court reverse the commissioner's decision that Ms. Ali is ineligible for unemployment benefits under RCW 50-20010. Ms. Ali is a Somali immigrant and mother and sole provider of four children who required childcare. She previously had a full-time day job and sought any work for which she was qualified in a 12-hour window, 7 days a week. Yet she was found ineligible for benefits because she needs to care for her children between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. Misinterpreted and misapplied provisions of the Employment Security Act were the cause. The denial of benefits occurred because her most recent job of building cleaner was designated an occupation with customary hours of 24/7, meaning that unemployment benefits claimants with that occupation must accept a job if offered, whether it has daytime, graveyard, or swing shifts.
Was that designation an incorrect designation?
That designation of building cleaner, you mean for the customary hours? Our position is that the origin of the information that Employment Security Department uses to designate customary hours is questionable.
My concern is, was assigning an occupational category of building cleaner erroneous? If she had other occupations, does the statute or the regulation provide for choosing among them or listing all of them? Is there anything, or is simply that the correct assignment of a wage category,
job category? In most cases, it's the last occupation that the person actually practiced. So, for example, if you were a dentist but you can't find a job, so you end up working as a restaurant server, that's the classification of your work for purposes of applying for benefits.
So they used the correct job category.
They did, in the sense that was what she was doing. However, she was seeking work in any kind of field for which she was qualified, which could have included server or hostess or any number of other professions.
Well, if I could ask a related question, I mean, are you contesting that? Is that part of your analysis that would require us to hold that the Employment Security Department erred in considering that to be the job description they would look at?
That is part of our argument, not the major part, but yes.
Is there an assignment of error? Is it a factual error that you're claiming then, that she was measured against the wrong job?
Indeed, it is a factual error because she wasn't given consideration for the fact that she was looking for work across a range of occupations, not strictly in the field of building cleaner.
But you agree, I take it from your previous response, that that is the way the system works. I mean, so you're challenging something about the system itself, not as it was applied in this particular case. That if she had previously worked as a dentist, then she wouldn't have to be available 24/7.
That's true. She would not have to be available 24/7. But because she was a building cleaner,
and conversely, your example of the person who works as a building cleaner, even though years ago they were qualified as a dentist, they'd still have to make themselves available 24/7.
They do.
Okay.
In Washington, the commissioner's decision in Ms. Ali's case suggests that even workers in such fields as building cleaner or truck driver who have worked for years in a daytime job might suddenly be required to switch to a graveyard shift because of the labor market information about customary hours that the Employment Security Department relies upon. But that labor market information was not developed for purposes of unemployment benefit eligibility. And contrary to the claim of the state in its brief, it is not even based on local markets. In addition, in fact, it applies to only one of the fields, as we mentioned, in which this claimant is applying for work. She applied for any work she was qualified to perform during her 12 hours, not only building cleaner work.
Well, is your objective here, are you trying to overturn or change, reform the way that the Department of Employment Security treats all workers? In other words, are you trying to say they should not just look at the most recent job, they should look at everything the person might potentially or once in the past was qualified for? Or are you trying to get us to do something specific related to people who have children?
The latter. It's an unfortunate fact that the way the system is set up, but that's not one of our particular focuses in this argument. The issue here is that the commissioner erred in ignoring the fact that Ms. Ali is a sole provider for her four children, and that was not taken into account and should have been.
Okay. Thank you.
The court has held that any restrictions on what are considered customary hours for a person's occupations are a substantial restriction. And this produces an absurd result because there has been a sharp difference in the way that unemployment benefits applications from some occupations are treated compared to other occupations. Did the legislature actually intend that the latitude for at least some restrictions only applies to CEOs, attorneys, and others whose customary hours are labeled as 7 to 6 and never to building cleaners and restaurant servers who work in fields that, according to the Department of Labor Occupational Outlook Manual, are occupations that are 24/7 nationally? We would question that. Ms. Ali's
case. Again, I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to get us to hold, because, I mean, I assume that if somebody who is a CEO or an attorney said, look, I know that I used to work 9 to 5, but I now have to be available for my children when they come home from school, and so I really can't work between the hours of 2 and 5.
Would that happen? So if you look at the cases that arise.
So are you trying to save that situation too? Or are you saying that it's the 24/7 combined with children, that's your focus?
Well, we question the whole basis across the board. However, the impact of the customary hours rules hits hardest on these occupations that are considered 24/7.
So if you were going to be an appellate judge writing the opinion in this case, in which you are presently the advocate, what would be the holding of that case? How would it end?
We would hold that Ms. Ali, that there was error in the designation of the customary hours. Ms. Ali should have been considered. There was error in the designation of Ms. Ali as unavailable, which is a disqualification for unemployment benefits.
Okay.
And there was error in the fact that the court failed to consider that she's the sole provider of her four children, and that require child care, and that this is essentially a violation of the Employment Security Act, which requires that the law be liberally construed for the purpose of reducing involuntary unemployment and the suffering caused thereby to a minimum. We want to mention also that Ms. Ali is an example of how the unemployment insurance system in general is failing to serve women and working families. The stereotype reflected in the unemployment insurance laws dating to the 1940s is that men are assigned to market work and that women are assigned to family work. That does not reflect a majority of today's families. And I will finish with my rebuttal. Thank you. Oh, do
you
I have
still
that?
Have, I have you, another minute. I reserved a minute for
you. Okay, please. Okay, thank you. But the overarching issue here, as I mentioned, is that the Employment Security Act statute itself provides guidance for these instances of contradictory, unclear, or obsolete languages or standards, and that is the liberal construction requirement that the Act must be liberally construed for the purpose of reducing involuntary unemployment and the suffering caused.
If you were writing this opinion, would you feel that it was necessary to overrule Jacobs?
That's an interesting question. I was going to actually address that in my rebuttal, but however, we consider that the Jacobs ruling was very relevant because it was a 70-year-old ruling that involved a woman who worked at Boeing as a riveter and lost her job because the plant closed after the war. So
you can finish her.
To finish.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Maria Coligno, and I'm the Assistant Attorney General for the Employment Security Department. Under the facts of this case, where Ms. Ali was unavailable as a building cleaner from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m., she was unavailable under the Employment Security Act's eligibility statute, under case law, and under the department's availability regulations. Because her arguments are better addressed to the legislature, this court should affirm the commissioner's determination that she was ineligible for unemployment benefits. Unemployment benefits come from the finite unemployment compensation fund. They assist individuals during periods of unemployment, and the goal is for individuals to return to work as soon as possible. The legislature has thus specified that only individuals who establish their attachment to the workforce are eligible for benefits, and that is where the availability requirement comes in. In order to be available for work, an individual must be ready, able, and willing to accept any suitable work which may be offered to him or her. And the department's regulations clarify that this means an individual has to be willing to work and available for work during the usual hours of their occupation, and an individual cannot impose conditions that substantially reduce or limit their opportunity to return to work at the earliest possible time.
If the person who was unemployed was a dentist but then had been disbarred, so to speak, thrown out for misconduct as a dentist and thereafter was only able to get some other kind of work, would you still say that they had to make themselves available in the same way that a dentist would?
In that instance, work as a dentist would no longer be suitable work because the individual would not necessarily have the credentials to still be a dentist. So in that instance, the department would then look at what work is that individual physically and mentally able to perform. So
why doesn't the fact of dependent children have the same effect of incapacitating someone to work 24/7?
Because in looking at what is suitable work is defined by the legislature as employment in keeping with individual's prior work experience, education, or training. This is because the underlying goal of the Employment Security Act is to get individuals back to work as soon as possible. So the department looks at what the individual is capable of performing, what work will the individual be hired for, what do they have experience in that will allow them to return to work as soon as possible. The goal is not necessarily...
Well, you make it sound as if there is a certain amount of discretion in an individual case. I mean, is it conceivable that a person who had small children under any circumstances, let's assume that the children are all... Let's assume somebody has quintuplets and they're all disabled. Does that make them... Is that a circumstance that might allow the commissioner or the hearing officer in an individual case to decide that they're just not realistically available? They might be available for part-time work, but not 24/7.
Not under the Employment Security Act as it is written. And as the Employment Security Act is written by the legislature, an individual...
But I haven't heard you quote a part of the statute yet. Maybe you're about to.
An individual...
That says the mother or father of quintuplets, all with special needs, has to be able to work as a building cleaner.
Well, the Act states that an individual has to be available for any suitable work which may be offered to them. And then suitable work is defined as employment in keeping with the individual's prior work experience, education, or training. There are factors that the commissioner is required to consider, but lack of child care or personal circumstances are really not any of the factors defined in the Employment Security Act. These are factors that...
Is it an exclusive list? I mean, so that only if it's specifically called out could it possibly ever be considered?
The commissioner does have the discretion to consider factors as it may deem pertinent, but it is not explicitly required to consider lack of child care or personal circumstances when determining suitable work.
You're admitting that they could. The commissioner could, I mean.
Such other factors that the commissioner may deem pertinent seems to give the commissioner discretion to consider other factors. But it cannot be said to be an error in this case for the commissioner not to exercise its discretion to consider these other factors. And the department's position is that the other factors were defined by the commissioner in regulation so that this other factor that the commissioner can consider is whether...
So it's really regulations and case law that you're relying on, not the statute itself?
The statute, given that it requires the individual to be available for any suitable work, and that suitable work is defined explicitly as employment in keeping with an individual's prior education, training, and work experience, clearly indicates that an individual, one needs to be pursuing work that they are capable of being hired to perform, not necessarily that the work itself will fit within an individual's personal circumstances. And yes, the court is also bound by Jacobs, which was decided over 70 years ago, in which the Supreme Court held that a claimant who was unwilling to accept night shifts was unavailable for work when night shifts were customary in her occupation. Jacobs was decided 70 years ago, and the legislature has declined to amend the availability requirement since then. There is no good cause exception in the availability requirement. There's no exception for lack of child care, lack of transportation.
Is the experience of taking care of children in the home looked at as prior work experience? Could it be?
I am not sure, Your Honor, but
I'm just referring to the, you know, there's one way of looking at a person in this situation is that they actually have two jobs. I mean, I think anybody who's a parent knows what I'm talking about. You know, you have a job, just like other people, and then you also have another job when you come home. And so that also entails certain skills.
Yes, and those may be skills that an individual could use to help them find another employment. However, it was undisputed until today that Ms. Ali's customary occupation was that of a building cleaner. She did not argue at her hearing that this was an incorrect classification, and had she argued that, the department, if an individual feels like they are improperly classified or that they are better suited, improperly classified in their customary occupation, they have the opportunity to raise that to the department, and the department will look at an individual's work history, they'll look at their previous pay history and really determine what are the occupations that they have experience in, what are the occupations where they will be hired in.
I understand that in the most recent session of the state legislature there was a bill that was introduced that was generally on this topic. Are you familiar with it?
Yes, Your Honor.
What did the department participate in the discussions about that legislation?
I believe the department did participate, although I don't believe it was necessarily one of the sponsors of the bill.
Did it? What do you happen to know what the department's position was?
No, I do not, Your Honor. But I do know that the bill did not pass in the last legislative session.
I was just curious. Because you said that you thought that it was a matter for legislation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm just wondering if the department probably is an entity with the vastest experience of all different kinds of people, you know, as the years go by and as ideas change. And I just thought that the department might have some views about if there was a desire on the part of the legislature to kind of ameliorate the system for the benefit of people with small children, that the department might have some thoughts about how to write such a statute.
Well, to the extent there is any amendment to the statute, the legislature would need to be careful not to allow individuals to remove themselves from the workplace. This is a benefit meant for individuals who are attached to the workforce, and so any availability exception needs to be carefully crafted so that it still remains a benefit that is for individuals who are just in a period of unemployment looking for a new job. Ms. Ali's hasn't really argued that the work of the building cleaner is not suitable, that she doesn't have the skills or experience of a building cleaner, just that being a building cleaner during certain hours is not suitable. But here, like the claimant in Jacobs, the claimant cannot limit the hours they will accept work when the work he's qualified to perform is likewise not limited. And here, it's important to remember that Ms. Ali's limitation was from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m., so she couldn't accept any shifts that started in the morning before 10 a.m. or any shifts that started in the evening and ended even just after 10 p.m. Ms. Ali's policy arguments are compelling, but they are best addressed in the by the legislature, who can carefully craft an exception. The department is required to apply the law and case law as it is written and exists, and for these reasons, the department respectfully asks this court to affirm.
Thank you.
We do not believe that legislation is the only remedy here. As the state has mentioned, the commissioner has discretion, considerable discretion, to consider other factors. That is written into the law. The Jacobs case illustrates something very parallel to what we are discussing here. Her name was not Rosie, it was Gladys, but she lost her job because of the remobilization of men who were returning from the war. She turned down a job because she because it had a rotating shift and she needed to take care of her children and could only work in the daytime. So is the Jacobs case still good law and being applied appropriately? We do not believe it is. The situation of Gladys today is magnified today as the number of working women mothers has ballooned and the interpretation of the Employment Security Act has become even further obsolete. The way in which the act has been deemed has been applied frequently contradicts the liberal construal requirement that is a basic principle of the act. And added to this are the subjective interpretations and often arbitrary policy decisions of the Employment Security Department, which call for action by this court.